and he just got into his third shooting. And
you just keep going easier and easier.
Dude, watching the body cam that was on him, his, and then the partners near him when they responded to this dude, and he did a phenomenal job. Like, beautifully executed, problem solving, everything. ID'd the gun came towards him. He had his maul on the dude the entire time. See the little green laser laying on him, and the dude shut the door as he was pointing the gun down on him. And he just smokes him through the door and everything. Did a phenomenal job. And he even moved, right? He moved and gave him a different angle to deal with, too, through the door. And I was like, dude, high five. Right? He did get shot in his plate carrier. He took one, which actually the light that was on his plate carrier took one, which was a cloud light. It stopped the bullet. Nice. It's sitting in it. It's actually cool.
Oh, that's cool. Get that.
And then, the next time he got a wing, right? And he had a little scratch on his arm. You know, but phenomenal job that he did, and it's really cool to see. But it's because of his first lucky ass shooting that he took the time to go ahead and invest himself, and it paid off because he could not be retiring in December, you know.
Yeah.
So
you do see that quite a bit where someone will have a close call. I've seen that. Dallas, weather looks good.
Temperature on the ground is going to be 94.5. And everybody else that has headphones on right now that doesn't give a fuck.
I don't like when the pilot talks to me. I'm like, just drive the plane. I don't need to say. I have weather on my phone.
Yeah.
Aaron's in the back. Do your fucking job.
Take off.
Get us there on time, you fuck.
This ain't turbulence, you pussy.
Yeah, it's rough air.
When's the last time somebody checked the door?
They call it light chop.
Light chop now?
Chop.
Is this an Airbus or a Boeing?
Yeah, do we have to worry about opening the doors?
Should I have brought my own tools?
Or will that be an emergency?
I flew down here United, and the only airplane I've been on in worse condition than the plane I was on coming down here was like Aeroflot when I was in Russia. So it was... And that plane had goats on it.
We fly you to the place.
I'm like,
carefully.
United, what's that like these days? Apparently it's terrible. They're not doing well.
No.
Delta's the way to go.
Delta
everywhere. If I can fly Delta, I will take that.
I think the only class I teach somewhat regularly where I can't fly Delta is when I fly up to Andrews, because they're up there in the oil panhandle. American goes to Midland, but Delta doesn't.
So. You were spoiled for a while living in Atlanta.
Yeah, direct shots everywhere.
Yeah, everywhere.
Nashville's like a mini hub, so even if I have a layover, it's Atlanta.
Yeah, that's not too bad.
I'm going to lose most of the day anyway.
Yeah, I'm going out.
And honestly, I don't mind a layover if it's a long flight.
If it's a nice airport, too.
Like when I go west, sometimes I'll go to Salt Lake and then go from Salt Lake to wherever I'm going.
Mm.
No, but Delta just has the best rewards program. They have the nicest planes. Everybody's nice.
I flew on Spirit when I went to SHOT Show.
That's terrible.
You poor soul.
Fantastic. Yeah.
You basically sat on a milk crate.
Yeah, it was actually a very interesting
but
experience.
But the milk crate was extra, huh?
It was PSA.
You paid for
research.
A flight. Yeah. You didn't pay to talk to anybody.
It was pretty much Walmart on that airplane. It must have been
I think the only airline cheaper than Spirit is Ryanair, but you don't really...
I don't hear about them.
They said you could even get cheaper if you go to the airport and buy directly from
the Spirit counter.
Yeah. You will get a much better
website.
Well, so all the airline websites, if you look at the price once and you come back, it's going to go up.
Hell yeah, brother.
Is that Fisher?
Yeah.
It's like anytime I'd go to...
He's
go
already
to,
shit-faced.
I'd get to... When I lived in Atlanta, I'd get to the airport, and Delta is like so big that all of Delta check-in is one terminal.
Yeah.
But like sometimes I'd walk over to the other terminal, do something, to see the Spirit counter, and like it was just fucking chaos. Whereas Delta, they're like, how can we help you? And like Spirit's like, who the fuck's next?
Yeah, it's like Walmart, dude.
Yeah.
It's Walmart.
It's like Walmart in Mexico.
Actually, Walmarts everywhere are all the same. I've been to a Walmart in almost every state that I fly to, and every single time I'm like,
yeah, they're pretty much the same.
That guy's in the other Walmart I was just at.
Yeah, they have the same characters.
Yeah, they're all the same characters. It just got different names, you know.
Fantastic.
All right, so what did we want to talk about?
Podcast.
So today we're talking about rewards points and airlines and miles and
traveling. Traveling as
people
retards that travel.
Just be like, nah. That doesn't relate to me.
So today we have Duffy and Cowan on the podcast.
Yeah. See, we're here at Shooter Symposium 2024, hanging out here in the corner of the lounge. Just vendor day one. So we're out here just
chilling.
Like a villain.
We have better lighting this time.
Yeah,
thanks
we do have,
to the camera guy.
Who shall remain nameless.
Do we not get to look at this camera? We have to look in that one. We can't all share.
You can turn around if you would like.
We should all just like awkwardly stare at the viewers.
It's just going to autofocus weirdly. Just every time.
Just make weird direct eye contact.
Editing this is going to be real pain for the video guy.
Camera angles
AI, man. We just do AI for camera editing.
Really? That's a thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's cool. Like, well, you know more about it than I do.
Yeah, I just tell it what track whose face is and what track their audio is, and then it goes...
Cuts it up, switches camera angles back and forth.
What?
It took an 8-hour process for me. When it wasn't really good, because I'd stay on you for 2 minutes, and I'd go for you to 2 minutes and everything. But now it'll go for me, then Ike will say something, and it'll go to him at 2-3 hours most now.
Like in this 30 seconds, it's already changed camera angles 5 times.
Yeah. No crap. And is this in the editing software?
Yeah. It's a plug-in to Premiere Pro.
That's so cool.
You see, I use Filmora. I ain't trying to step it up to that stuff I don't know how to use.
AI, dang cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd be
doing
anything.
Over, man.
Yeah.
Literally, eventually.
Possibly.
Skynet.
So if you're watching this in 3 years and the robots now control the world.
You heard it here first. Yeah.
We told you so.
Everywhere's AI, except for on the range.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of that, what are y'all teaching this weekend?
So tomorrow night, Aaron and I are both teaching a low light pistol class.
Teaming up.
Yeah. Doing the
bringing the band back together.
Trying to do the two panda thing and turn into one panda. Yeah. So do that. And then what is it? Saturday night I have a low light class again, and then Sunday morning I have a handgun class. So just my mechanics courses.
Yeah, I'm doing the low light with John, and then I have rifle, and then Sunday I'm doing intermediate handgun. But only 8 hours of it, so we'll see how that goes.
So, condensed courses.
It'll be a good time.
Is this year all double instructor classes? Or?
There's quite a few of them going on, but not everybody's.
Not everybody.
Not
like
every
the
class,
one,
no.
Yeah. See, I looked at the schedule. I saw a lot of doubles.
I think the students get a lot out of that because they get two different perspectives. Me and John, we have a, like, if you were to put us on a Venn diagram, the crossover is pretty reasonable, but it's not everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, I tell students all the time, like, you should always seek out an alternate opinion on whatever you're interested in, at least one, because we all teach about 80, 90% of the same stuff. But sometimes that 10% really matters. And for me, it's like me and John may teach something the same way, but we may teach it differently in how we deliver it, and it may click better for
somebody else,
for John, than they did with me. So it may be the exact same block of instruction, but the way he delivers it appeals to them more, and maybe one of his students, it would appeal to them more the way I did it. So
it depends on their level of autism, right? If their scale is this way, they'll understand us one more.
How tistic are you? Where are you on the tistic scale?
How's your tism?
Yeah, how's the tism?
Yeah.
What scale? Who's using big words today?
Yeah. Aaron usually uses the biggest words.
Yeah, he does.
He does the more
pedantic about stuff.
Yeah, he likes, you know, he's.
I try not to be. I try not to be.
But it's okay.
There's a lot of words.
And the thing is, it could be a vocabulary class too.
Yeah.
And I think people
you
can
never know where it's going to come at you, what you're going to learn, where it's going to come from.
He just said what? What does that fucking mean?
I try to be as laconic as possible, but it's not always. sometimes it airs into pedantism, and that appeals to some people. They like the specificity of it. Keeps them grounded.
The nitty gritty.
Yeah. What's the specificity of this particular thing?
Oh, that's what you should do on every class listing, have a specificity level.
Yeah.
Like, this is a level 10. Yeah. This is how I teach this one.
And then just write out the scale, almost like a pain scale, like do little faces, like how checked in someone is, or this is like a 2 on the specificity scale, so you don't even really have to leave the parking lot.
Yeah.
You can just be out there.
You could just hear it, and you'll be all right.
Yeah. me and Ian have joked about getting Ike, like, a chart. To where he can walk in and be like, this is how I feel today.
Because like a little Velcro thing he can move?
Because he'll come in and he'll be on a call and be super busy and going at it. You're like, hey, is he upset? Like, I don't know.
Pens
and then he walks in and just cracks the joke. You're like, well, he's.
What's really great is I'll wear AirPods too sometimes. So like I'll be out back, like in the back doing something with AirPods in on a call. And I usually only wear one. So like they'll see me from this side, they'll walk up and start talking. I'm like, I'm on a call. Like they have no idea though. Yeah. Like, so it's.
Yeah. It'll be in your audiobook, chilling out.
Or I'll have both in. I'm just over there, like, just, like, doing my thing. And then they're, like, talking to me for 5 minutes, and I'm just over there.
I'm like that without anything in my ear.
just constantly moving his head.
My wife can be in the other room, and she'll say something, and I just hear vowels. I can't make out what she's saying.
They should know this by now.
Yeah.
I had to move an Alexa into our bathroom so I wouldn't get yelled at. Mm-hmm. So they could just be like, hey, make an announcement. Because I'd be in my office, and you can't hear from the bathroom to the office. All you hear is rah, 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 and like, who the fuck's yelling at me?
So you use Alexa like this a PA system in the house?
This is a really first world conversation.
Yeah,
yeah. We use it as an announcement. So
we got a lot of white people problems here. Man, my technology that I bought for myself.
I need
really
another
is hurting
talking
me.
Box that's a little closer than this other talking box
that I already have.
It works.
That's great. It works. That's absolutely good.
And my 9-year old the other day, she's doing her homework in her room sitting there, and I hear her go, Alexa, how do you spell whatever word it was? And I was like, I think that's cheating, but I like it.
that's using your resources.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's exactly. Using your resources. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a downside to it now, because now you just know something. Like before, it's like a comedian did a bit on this where he's like, "Where's Tom Petty from?" And it took him like 10 years to figure out where Tom Petty was from. But now you can just be like, Tom Petty is from blah, and he's also apparently an alien. Welcome to the internet.
Yeah,
this is true. It kind of breaks the ice.
That instant gratification.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
no mystery.
On that topic, which we'll turn this into a technology podcast, what are y'all seeing right now? Any, like, technologically advanced tools y'all are using to teach?
Recently, I think we both got the Ace Virtual Trainer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we got them at SHOT Show. They gave them to us, and they were like, play with them. And at SHOT Show alone, it was kind of fun to play with. Once you tweak it a little bit, because you had to tweak the settings to make sure that it's kind of tracking the same way you're seeing, because sometimes it like moves too slow. Once I tweak the settings, that thing's kind of fun.
Yeah.
What I did notice though is I'm not holding the little controller like I hold a regular gun. So like in the sense of like grip wise.
Yeah, because there's no recoil.
Yeah, so there's no recoil. It's like holding an Xbox controller like a gun.
Yeah.
And and what I realized is like that's not helping me. So I had to be very specific about how I was holding it so that it transferred that same like ability, if you want to call it that, or practice. But I don't use it only. I think it's nice to have. It's not a have to have, but it's a cool piece of technology that you can use to.
It's
like,
definitely useful for the visual process, if nothing else.
Definitely. And then you could do this pass through thing where you can see like the room that you're in and put targets all over the place.
And all you need is a Oculus 2. Oculus 3 is better.
Yeah.
For more features, better clarity. Mm-hmm. And then they make the gun, and then you basically
put the little controller in it.
Put the controller in it, and then, you know, obviously calibrate it. Mm-hmm. And then you can run stages. You can do the pass through where you can set up your own stages. It's useful, but of course, it's just another one of those issues where. And then the Cool Fire Trainer is out here too, and that's another facet or another option that people have. A lot of these products, they don't replicate recoil. So if you think about just general old dry fire, you're doing a trigger press, but what happens when you press that trigger? Press the trigger never happens. So you're never experiencing recoil. So some people will develop really good physical technique for dry fire, but then when they go shoot, they get frustrated. And I was like, well, you probably weren't gripping the gun like you would have been gripping it in anticipation of that energy.
Yeah. Gripping it two different ways.
So I've always found dry fire to be very useful for everything up until I fire that first round. And then after that, I got to find a different avenue or a different way to approach it. Like Mantis is good, the Mantis X. I'll do dry fire sometimes where I'll do a very specific string of what I'm doing, like, you know, 10 different exercises. And then I'll take the Mantis X to the range and then shoot those same exercises because you can run it on the gun and see what the differences are. And see, because I think humans, just by design, we will take shortcuts if we can. And we don't always consciously realize it. So I might be not gripping the gun or pulling the trigger the same way, but then when I know that it's going to recoil, my behavior changes.
Yeah.
And I want to see what the difference is going to be between the two performances.
Yeah, like the whole, I know I'm going to pull out, and it's just one shot, and so I'm not really.
Or when you know a reload's coming.
Yeah.
You know, I see students do this in class a lot, because like, I'll set my reload stages up where it happens. You start from a sight picture, because that's where reloads happen. Almost every reload is going to happen from a sight picture. So you're shooting, slide lock, right? But I'll be like, all right, chamber around, take that mag out, put an empty mag in, and then we're going to start from right here. They know that gun's about to go to slide lock, and they're like, I got to be fast. So they'll be like, bang.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why did you hit his target? I don't know.
Where'd that one go?
Yeah, they'll start the reload. I'm like, dude, you got to go bang, then reload. Yeah, but they'll start the rotation, and sometimes it's just like 2-3 inches. But you can definitely tell they're doing it.
Yeah.
I had one guy,
and
he's like, I've never done this before. I don't understand why I keep doing this, but he kept doing it. Right before he pulled the trigger, he'd hit the mag release, and then he'd fire. And then he'd put the mag in, and he'd go back, and he'd click.
That's his
tism. Yeah, because the slide wouldn't log back.
Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's smart, but you're cheating. You got to knock
you're
it off.
You're gaming it at that point.
Well, so I actually have a different philosophy on dry fire. Like, I don't like using any technology. Like, the majority of the time, I don't use anything but my gun. And I pay attention to what the sighting system's doing, and I use that to evaluate my shooting. And I find that to give me the best results over using like a Mantis or using the VR stuff or any of those kind of cold fire thingamabobs. The only thing, once again, that we're not getting just like any dry practice is recoil. So if what you do get out about not using any of that other stuff is you pay attention more to what you're actually supposed to be paying attention to, which is what your sighting system is doing to an extent. So I could see if I make minor errors and see that thing wiggle funny or do some kind of little slashy movement, and I'm like, ooh, I messed up, right? And I could identify those things a little easier when I don't have some funky recoil from like CO2 coming out at me.
Yeah.
Or I'm not paying attention to what the readout is telling me on the accelerometer that I just attached to my gun, you know? So little things like that, like I get out of just using good old, like just the gun and that's it. And you'd be surprised how much you can acquire from that if you pay attention enough.
Yeah.
And I think people are always trying to find the quick fix, like Aaron said, and there is none. There's never going to be. You either get it or we can one day upload you with skill, but like we haven't gotten there. Like Elon Musk hasn't figured that out yet.
Yeah.
So until we get there, like there's no easy button. You just have to do the reps, right?
And that's the hard part there.
Yeah,
getting people to do the reps.
Well, what's funny is like I was just talking about it with somebody else. It's like I was talking to him because I had a private with him when I came out for my night vision class here, and he was like, "Oh yeah, man, I actually hate to say it, but I haven't been practicing." I'm like, "Well, like that sucks, right?" Like he's like, "Yeah, like every time I pick up my gun, I still feel cold. Like I feel like I need to warm up before I'm able to shoot well." And that's a great indicator that you haven't been practicing enough or just handling your firearm, right? Like the more you do something, right? Like
comfortability is huge.
Like comfort with it, right? But if you think about it like driving your own car, right? If you've had your car for a while, you drive it and you're comfy in that thing. You sit in it, you're good, as long as your wife hasn't messed up your seat. and then from there, like if you ever get in a rental car, which all of us probably do at some point, you get into a rental car, you're like super uncomfortable. You're like, fuck, this is so messed up. I got to mess with this. And you have to constantly shift the seat throughout your drive to figure out where it needs to be. And it's still like a learning process as you do it. But if you had that car for a week, man, it's like you get to your car and you're like, wait, the shifter's not even there anymore. Like it's a different car. You know, you've gotten used to it because we as humans can adapt to things really quick, but you have to give yourself the time to do it. And that's where people fail is like they don't spend enough time with it. Just like a cell phone, man. You get a new cell phone. If you switch from like Android to iPhone or iPhone to Android, like it's a huge learning process, like to like learn the new like OS that you're using. But from there, once you get it a week later, you're like, all right, cool, dig, 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 and you just do your thing. So it's kind of cool, but you have to put the time into it, and that I think is invaluable. And if you did that with your gun every day and just touched it for 5 minutes instead of scrolling through Instagram looking at titties and asses, like you'd probably get a lot out of it compared. So 5 minutes like of just literally handling it, not even having to pull the trigger, not even having to do anything fancy, you'd get better than you thought you were, you know, or you more comfortable than you thought you could be.
And now you've convinced me to buy a Walther steel frame PDP.
Go for it. Go for it.
Because I've been like, man, I don't want to
Learn a new gun.
I don't want to learn a new gun. Different mechanics.
I deal with that all the time.
Don't fear the
well,
new.
How many guns are you going through in a year? Here's the thing.
It's like I'm super boring when it comes to taking a class for me. Like if you come to a Red Dot instructor class, especially like a one that's going to have law enforcement there, I'm running a stock gun. I'm going to run a stock AXG or a stock G17 or if the class is 2011 heavy because all these LA agencies are going to Staccatos for some reason. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. Scott is a great gun. I don't understand why it's seeing a resurgence in law enforcement. I've actually seen it starting to cause problems, but that's a separate conversation. But I'll bring a 2011 style gun just in case because I want the students to – when I do demo, I don't demo everything, but some things have to be demoed. I want them to see me doing it on their gun without being like, give me your gun. But because I'm a left-handed shooter, I have to constantly – I literally in my mind I pull – I open a drawer and say this is the AXG drawer. These are the AXG controls. On my AXG, my magazine release is set up for a right-handed shooter. On my Glock 17, my magazine release is set up for a left-handed shooter. On my 2011s, they're all set up for right-handed shooters. So anytime I change guns, I got to open that drawer and take out that mental process and like put it into the 8-track and knock it in there.
Plug in that
and
program.
And crank it up a little bit and get it to work. Because I have to remind myself, hey, when you do this demo and you go to hit that magazine release, it's not where you think it is coming from the gun you just used. And I've had good success with that, but I had to break that process down in dry fire. And for me, I do more dry fire in hotels than I do at home, but I still do dry fire at home. But I've got myself set up to basically a discipline standard of a minimum of 5 minutes. I'll just set the alarm on my phone and I'll do 5 minutes of dry fire. And if I have something I need to do, as soon as that timer goes off, I'm done. But if I'm in the hotel room and I'm watching Cartoon Network, I'm like, well, I ain't got nothing else to do anyway. Yeah. Let me go ahead and pop another 5 minutes on the timer. And that way I'm not trying to take a huge bite out of my day. And I'm still getting the reps in that I want to get in. And sometimes I do use the Mantis, but I don't use it all the time. And then with the Ace, I'm pretty much just using that. My plan for that thing was to have it in the luggage and take it. And I don't feel like doing it.
Hi, I'm Chris from Big Tech's
Ordnance, and I'm Ian from Big Tech's
Ordnance. And today we've got the weekly update. So first off, from Voltor is the classic Myrrh upper receivers, right? So we've got them in foliage green, black, standard black. Those are my picks. What do you got over there?
For all the wheel gun enthusiasts out there, we've started carrying some Safariland Comp 3 and Comp 2 speed loaders for J frames and K frames. So if you guys need a good speed loader for all of your revolver needs, we got some. We have the new Streamlight Wedge XT also. These come in black and FDE. Great little task light. You know, drop your keys underneath the couch. You're looking for your burrito. Good little option from Streamlight. Comes with a little lanyard on it as well.
Solid price point on those. I'll have to reference the price point on
USB-C
those.
Rechargeable, and it has a deep carry pocket clip on it.
Yeah, so option.
Looks great.
Coming up, there's a bunch of classes. We've got Paradox training. Going to be across the street at the range. Doing that the 27th, not this weekend, but next weekend. Anyway, lots of training events coming up. We just also posted the Sons of Liberty.
Oh, yeah, the Armorers
class. Armorers class in May. It's up on the website. Anyway, thanks for watching.
Be safe.
Finger guns.
It's like playing video games. So if you like playing video games, that Ace thing is going to like get you into dry fire a little bit, but you still got to use your real gun. Yeah. You still got to get...
And
you still got to pull that thing out.
The conversation that John brought up where somebody came up to him and said, hey, I haven't been practicing. And I'm like... Why are you telling me? No, I mean, I understand.
Because he's
like,
going to show me in a couple of days.
question is, what kind of conversation do you want to have right now? Mm-hmm. Like, why are you telling me this so when later you see me shoot?
You're not as disappointed.
You're not. I'm not as surprised. Like, he clearly hasn't been practicing. or are you looking for me to give you some kind of motivation? Mm-hmm.
Which
that's an untapped industry right there.
Dry fire? No,
firearms life coach.
Oh. You can do it. Do it one more time.
Yeah. Like I'm going to sell a book on...
Get another rep.
It'd be like, you know, it'd be like 60-second abs, but for guns. I don't know.
How to coach the retarded.
P90X.
How can we monetize this?
Actually,
let me think about it. Was it P90X? What was it called?
Yeah, P90X. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, what's that yoga one mixed with Pilates?
Oh, Taibo or
Playo or Yo Play or something.
Yeah. I just recently learned that Pilates was the guy's name.
Oh, really?
Steve Pilates.
Steve Pilates.
That was a real dude. Oh, and there's pictures of him from the 60s on the internet where he's doing all the weird stretches and stuff. It's wild. That guy's name, I don't know if his first name actually was
Steve.
What's
the one with like Billy Blaze? What was that?
Was Taibo.
Taibo, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I love Brian.
But now everybody's got Peloton stuff.
Yeah.
So Brian Regan, the comedian, I remember he did a skit on that dude. He's like, all right, man, so we're going to jump over the fence. We're going to jump over the fence. We're going to run from the cops.
Is it just me or does he sound like Jim Gaffigan?
He does.
Me and my wife were driving because I got XM in the car, so we listen to comedy. And I anytime he comes on for a moment, I think it's Jim Gaffigan. But Jim Gaffigan is very... He has very sloppy words, so he's like, bleh. And I'm like, okay, so that's not him. So that's the only way I can tell him apart.
You gotta wait.
And my wife's like, they don't sound anything alike. And I'm like, well, you know what? Your hearing's probably better than mine, so.
It's probably close.
We'll trust your opinion. Man, we really went off a tangent on that one, didn't we?
Yeah.
That's good stuff.
60-second.
Training.
So going back to what you said earlier about staccatos and law enforcement, mm-hmm. Can you touch on that a little bit?
Excuse me. So this may be me being very boring. Because
pedantic.
No, it's just boring. Reliability is boring. Something's reliable, it's boring, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, there's nothing to talk about.
Or you can get into the nuances, or you can start to get into pedantism about triggers and slide releases and, oh, I'm going to mm-hmm. do this differently, and I'm going to change the angle on that, and I want a trigger that does – and that's being pedantic. I don't care what you say. Unless it's like just a crap trigger and you got to replace it. Like, I get that. But what I'm seeing with the staccatos is we're dealing with basically a 1911 operating system. Mm-hmm. So we've got a magazine release that's not reversible. We've got an active safety. It's AMBI or not. Mm-hmm. And it's a single action only trigger. And then we have some particulars with the magazines, how they behave and under certain manipulations and stuff like that. So all that stuff. So if I take a guy who became a cop, and he'd never really messed with guns, so they issued him a Glock 17. And he went through the academy with the Glock 17, and then he started shooting the Glock 17, and then anytime his department made him shoot, he was shooting the Glock 17, and then if he ever shot on his own time, which probably didn't, he shot the Glock 17. Now fast forward 5, 6, 7 years, I now give him a 2011. What's about to happen? Do you think he's going to have some training issues?
Definitely.
They can be overcome. If he's the kind of guy who only shoots when you make him,
if he's the
he's not going to overcome those
issues.
It's never
going to happen. Yeah.
So what I'm watching happen, and this just isn't those guys, because I'm teaching instructor-level classes, so all my students are instructors, which is a scale. It varies. Like, this may be the best shooter this department has. And I'm like, but usually I see good shooters, but they may not be worldly in the realm of gun operating systems. So I've had officers, I taught a class up in Virginia, and one of the departments that was there, all the guys had switched to staccato, and two of the officers in the class had never really shot single action only anything. They came up on striker guns.
Yeah.
I think they originally were issued M&Ps, and then they went to Glocks. Mm-hmm. So he would come out of the holster, and if he remembered to turn the safety off, which again, training issue, if he remembered to immediately clear it, he would take his thumb off and put it underneath. And then, because that's his Glock grip.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then he'd pull the trigger, and the slide would cycle, and the gun would recoil, and his thumb would drive up and put safety on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he'd go bang.
Click.
Bang. And people are like, oh, that's a training issue, training issue, training issue. And you're absolutely right. It is a training issue. Is your department teaching a transition course to go from Glock or whatever to staccato? No. It's a gun's a gun. Didn't we just talk about how this was a training issue? So my question is, I can get three Glocks for a staccato?
Yeah.
Yeah. What is the staccato doing? And don't get me wrong, I love staccatos. What's it doing better? That's the part I can't figure out. Why would a department spend three times as much, plus or minus,
yeah,
for a gun that essentially is supposed to do the same thing that the Glock did, hit the bad guys? If the Glock or the M&P or the FN or whatever they had before is this just trying to use the gun to overcome skill issues? Because that's what it feels like to me. I don't know. I'm seeing a training issue. It's obviously correctable, but you have to provide the training.
You have to actually put in the work to overcome it.
Yeah, and agencies don't generally, because I ask this question, like, hey, how many, outside of qualification, how many hours of firearms training, live fire training, are you guys doing a year? And some
Pretty
departments,
close to zero, I bet.
The answer is zero. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And some departments are, we have 10 hours, or we've got, but nobody's telling me, oh, we have 40 hours throughout the year.
Yeah.
Now, that department exists. I haven't seen them.
Probably very few and far between, I would
imagine. There's certain agencies that do.
But even then, like, 40 hours is nothing, man.
It really isn't. And if you think about, if you take 40 hours and you spread it out over a year, but then you think about, okay, that's like, what, 5 8-hour days. But the 8-hour day is actually a 6-hour day.
It's less than an hour a week.
Yeah.
Because then add in lunch, you know.
And
add in,
breaks. Yeah, and cops take luxurious breaks.
Yeah, 2-hour lunches and stuff.
So I always think, like, if the individual citizen is like, hey, I don't want to carry this gun anymore, I'm going to switch to a Staccato, I'm actually a little bit less adverse to that, because I'm pretty sure they'll probably, if I'm talking to them in a class, it's evident to me that they're willing to put in the time
and the investment
to make the transition.
Yeah, because not every cop's a gun guy.
Definitely.
You know,
Like, they're few, like, they're disproportionately smaller.
Was it out of every 100 men? Was that Herodotus or Heraclitus that said that? Out of every 100 men?
I'm not sure.
Okay, I figured you would know. Ranger, you know, you guys put that on a t-shirt at some point, I'm sure.
Some people do.
So anyway, the whole out of every 100 men thing. It's either Heraclitus or Herodotus. It's one of the two.
Somebody with age.
One of the older guys said it. So out of every 100 men.
Curly hair.
You're going to end up with, like, when I was a training officer for a police department, I had 38 officers that I was responsible for their firearms and all that other stuff. And out of those 38, I had two guys that were tuned in, they shot on their own time, they did competition shooting, they were dealing with that last 10% of perfection that they were going to chase for the rest of their lives. And then I had four people who were, they would do it, but only because you made them. Mm-hmm. They were good shooters, but they didn't care. And then everyone else was a quickly sliding scale of shit. Like, where's the bottom? Where's the bottom? Where's the bottom? Where's the bottom? Because they weren't gun guys. Mm-hmm. They were just there for the check.
Yeah.
And they didn't see any problem with it because they hadn't needed the gun. So they're like, well, I'm probably not going to need it since I hadn't needed it.
Yeah.
Frequency bias or complacency. Oh,
I just had a great example of that. A buddy of mine who's been at a local PD by me, he spent a huge amount of time training, but only after his first shooting. Mm-hmm. Right? He was reactive to the situation, right? He had a bad incident. He got lucky as hell. And then he was like, I need to learn how to do this better. And then lo and behold, he has a second shooting years and years later, and it works out very well. And he's like, all right, it validated the fact that I invested in myself, and now I'm doing better. Cool. And then no BS, like, not even a month ago, I think it was 2 weeks ago, and he retires in December, and he just got into his third shooting. And
you just keep going easier and easier.
Dude, watching the body cam that was on him, his, and then the partners near him, when they responded to this dude, and he did a phenomenal job, like, beautifully executed, problem solving, everything. ID'd the gun came towards him. He had his maul on the dude the entire time. Oh, you see the little green laser laying on him, and the dude shut the door as he was pointing the gun down on him, and he just smokes him through the door and everything. Did a phenomenal job. And he even moved, right? He moved and gave him a different angle to deal with too, through the door. And I was like, dude, high five. Right? He did get shot in his plate carrier. He took one, which actually the light that was on his plate carrier took one, which is a cloud light. It stopped the bullet. It's sitting in it. It's actually cool.
Oh, that's cool. Get that.
And then the next time he got a winged, right? And he had a little scratch on his arm, you know, but phenomenal job that he did. And it's really cool to see, but it's because of his first lucky ass shooting that he took the time to go ahead and invest himself, and it paid off because he could not be retiring in December, you know?
Yeah.
So
you do see that quite a bit where someone will have a close call. I've seen guys start to take, like, defensive tactics more seriously. Like, mm-hmm. Oh, I got to start taking jujitsu, or I got to start doing this, or mm-hmm. I got to lose some weight, or I got to take life more seriously. Cause complacency is a real thing. Humans, like, by design, we just get complacent.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, that ties all the way back down to your eye fire. You're like, well, I'll just do it later. Or I did it recently. I'm good. And we can talk ourselves into all kinds of different mental positions where we don't have to do something.
It's funny. I kind of see it like you guys remember that green tube of goo that was in like the Ninja Turtles movies?
Yeah.
The ooze?
The ooze. Yeah. There you go. Yeah. Right? Remember how like it would empty like when they were inserting it into the machine and all that BS? Well, when I think of training, I actually think of that ooze tube, right?
That is super specific.
Yeah, so okay. Bear with me, right?
Okay, okay.
So when I get a good practice session, whether it's dry or live or whatever, right, I imagine that tube filling, right? And I reach some kind of pinnacle with that tube. I'm like, I am warmed up, right? Like, come at me, bro, kind of feeling, right? That kind of like full of practice, right? And like I'm practiced at that point. The second I leave the range or I stop dry firing, I put my stuff down and put it away and go eat or something, like it just starts to drain slowly, but it starts to drain. Mm-hmm. And for some people, it drains fast because they're inexperienced. They have less time and just they suck at shooting or whatever. But the further down it gets in my mind, I'm like, oh my God, I must be half a tube right now. I need to go practice, right? Like, it sounds crazy, but that's my autism, right? as we started the conversation with, but like, I'm trying to keep that tube, man, full all the time. So whatever I can, like, I'm literally dressed to go out to the range before you guys stop me to come out here and do a podcast. And I was like, I'm feeling my tube of ooze.
So where are you at right now?
Like, I don't know. On caffeine, full. but on little skill stuff, man. I dry fired this morning before I went to the gym, and then it's like, man, I'm feeling like it's dropping. I want to go shoot, right? So it's like one of those things. Like in my mind, that's how it works because I enjoy this enough. Some people, it may be like they need to be motivated to do it, and then some people need a catalyst, right, to force them to do it, like. Like either somebody sitting there, like a life coach, a gun life coach, or like you just need, you know, a bad situation to cause you to like take it more seriously. And like, I don't know about you, but I don't want a bad situation to cause me to take it more seriously. So can it happen? Yeah, man. Like a car accident can too. Luckily, we practice driving every day. Like you could do the same thing with shooting, you know, like a bad shooting situation could happen. And you could be so unprepared that you kill somebody's little girl, like, bro, that's something that could be worse than death kind of thing. And you do that, like, don't let that be your catalyst. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Be prepared enough not to make that your catalyst and treat it as such. And you would be, you'd probably take it more seriously. So that's the way I look at it, right? Like, I don't want to make a mistake that'll cost me my sanity and my life, my future, all that jazz. I'd rather put in the investment and give myself that time and give myself that confidence that can only come from getting better at something versus sucking so bad that you do the wrong thing. And it, honestly, like it's failure that's going to lead you in that direction. But if you don't find that failure, you're never going to learn anything. Like you have to get there, which is the scariest thing for all of us to reach. Like think of the male species, right? The male side of the species, right? We don't want failure. We hate it, right? We don't like failing at something. We don't like being bad at things, but it's okay. Like nobody gives a fuck. Like nobody cares that you suck at shooting right now. Somebody's going to care when you do the bad thing with the gun, but like when you come to the range and you come to a class or you come go practice or whatever, nobody cares that you suck. You're there to get better. We get it. It's like seeing somebody overweight at the gym. You're like, they're on the treadmill. They're going. Like, high five. Like, I'm that guy that walks around and gives those fat people a high five. Like, yeah, I know. I'm an asshole. But I'm like, I'm happy they're there because it's such a good thing. It's like, man, you're doing something good for yourself. Come back tomorrow or whatever, you know? Come back later. But it's like, that's the same thing. Like, if somebody sucks shooting, but they're out there trying to get better and they're dry practicing. And I get it every once in a while. Students have sucked and I'm like, dude, you need to practice more. And they send me videos, they DM me videos or email me or add them to the Facebook page or like the alumni page and stuff. And they show like they're trying. Like, good on you, Bubba. Like, because you could suck more, but you practicing is probably going to make you suck less. So do it, right? And it's kind of cool to see. And I think that's something that we need to, like, I think as a community of peeps that want to make better human beings is encourage those kind of things versus like, you know, oh man, that instead of digesting somebody's like the run they put up on the internet and the like competition run or something or a drill they do, instead of like dissecting all the things they did bad, right? Oh, you're a piece of shit. You put your thumb in the wrong spot, or you didn't even see the target on that first shot, or whatever BS that people like put up. Instead of doing that, it's like encourage them a little bit, you know, like hey, let's do betters. You know, I like to see that you're shooting. Good thing that you went to a competition. Like, rock on. I know it sucked, and you were at the bottom of the barrel, but you probably learned something from about yourself or about what you could be working on. So I take things a little bit different when it comes to that, but always trying to fill my ooze, man. Always filling my ooze. It's weird.
There's so short. Yeah, just clip just that. Nothing else. No context.
Yeah, no context. Fill my ooze.
Fill your ooze.
I'm going to have to do some digging on YouTube to find some early 90s.
Yeah,
teenage that's like late 80s.
Was it late 80s?
It was before I was born. I was watching them bitches.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Never mind.
I love me some Ninja Turtle movies.
I'm pretty sure I saw 1 and 2.
I think the live action movies were 90s, but the cartoons, yeah. 80s.
Because I can remember going to see 3 in the theater for sure. Maybe 2.
Yeah.
That's cool.
I
watched them on VHS.
You're close to the same age. Yeah. You're
42.
Yeah, we're the same.
42 or 43, something like that.
Yeah, 81.
It's not, dude. 25 was the last year. 25, I could rent a car. After that, it didn't even matter.
Yeah, after that, it's all
car insurance. 25, the last perk is car rental, and then
it's just downhill after that.
Yeah, it's just downhill after that. And everybody makes a big deal out of 50 because you're like, you're half a century old, but I'm not there yet, so I don't know.
Somebody will tell you when you get there, you know.
Yeah. My wife has to remind me how old I am because I forget. Yeah, it doesn't matter anymore.
She tries to like gaslight me. She's like, "Yeah, you're 34." I'm like, "Wait a second, no, I'm not. I'm 32." She keeps on like trying to like
add years.
Yeah, just add a year here and there.
That's good. That's good.
That's hilarious.
It's an interesting conversation because like no one has really cracked the code on conformity to discipline. Because you have to have like a controlled environment with penalties for failure, a military, right? A police department, John, you said it right. Like nobody cares if you suck. And that's like literally the definition of a police administration. Nobody cares that their officers suck until something happens. Because if they cared, because it's the least likely piece of equipment a cop's going to use, but it's the one with the highest penalties. It's literally pass fail.
Yeah, it's a risk versus a reward.
Because at the very least, missing will cause property damage, which, again, not a big deal. But the bullet should have went in bad guy, not into a plate glass window or somebody's car or something like that, which whatever.
Susie sitting over there.
So a lot of departments, they don't care about training until something bad happens. And then they try to – and they may fix it, and then it may be fixed for a little while. But then you get down to the individual shooter, and not even cops, just people. How do you motivate them? Well, we've tried all these different T-shirts. We've tried these different books. We've tried
stickers.
We've tried guilt-shaming people into shooting better with Instagram. Like
Punisher symbol.
Like Punisher symbol this and sheepdog that. Like as a cop, I was like, what T-shirt are we – we did, okay, sheepdogs. And
we've
then we
tried these.
We did Spartans for an uncomfortable amount of time. I think a lot of people didn't do a lot of research into that whole whatever.
Free society.
And then, like, I think we're on Vikings now, which is really weird.
I don't know.
Samurai were in there somewhere. But it's like no one has ever cracked the code on what you can say or what quote you can use from Peaky Blinders to get someone to really start taking this stuff seriously.
Oi, bloke.
So on the internet, what you really see is you see people, like, you'll see a conversation about skill specifics, and then some guy will just drop a tombstone quote. I'm like, dude, you are invisible. Why did you skyline yourself? Mm-hmm. Because now I'm looking at you like, I found the idiot. And he's probably, in his mind, he thinks like, well, aim small, miss small. And I'm like, do you even understand what that means? Because you're right, but not on purpose. Like, you just stumbled into this.
You accidentally ran into the right answer.
He's correct through no fault of his own. And it's just like the same thing with education. Like, you'll go to classes on adult learning, and they'll straight up tell you, like, hey, we're still in the dark ages on how to maximize knowledge retention. Mm-hmm. And then we found that lecture is the most inefficient way to retain knowledge. And I'm like, aren't you lecturing me right now? Like, what? And they're like, well, we don't know what else to do.
We had to give you a lecture to tell you that lectures aren't very
– Yeah, so it's kind of – it's incumbent – it always comes back to it's incumbent upon you to pay attention and seek clarification and then it's not willpower. It's discipline. You have to have the discipline to do something. And if shooting is only a small facet of your life because you don't carry a gun professionally, you're probably less likely to have the discipline for the grand exercises. But 5 minutes of dry fire? Come on. Mm-hmm. I've literally wasted 5 minutes just staring at a wall in the morning, like
I've sat on a toilet longer than 5 minutes. You know,
What's that?
You sit on the shitter for longer than 5 minutes.
You can get a dry fire in there.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Two birds, one stone.
Dude.
And that brings it back to like the staccato conversation and the police officers. And I'm not going to say a certain police department or a certain retailer or something that did something, but they were trading in Safariland holsters that were light compatible for Safariland holsters that were not light compatible.
And that was definitely a training issue.
Because they were taking their lights from their officers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because of problems and mistakes and negligence, but that's a training issue. Anytime someone shows me an example of like why weapon lights aren't a good idea, it's always a training issue. Yep. And I'll be the first to tell you, the first weapon light I was ever officially issued on a handgun in a police department, they just gave it to us. And they gave us our new holsters. And we're there at roll call putting everything together. And luckily, I already owned a gun, and I already had some experience with a weapon light, and I just used a little bit of common sense. I hadn't had any real formal training, but I understood that, like, this is for gun stuff, right? So I get my weapon light, and I go 10-8. And everything's good for me. But I wasn't even an instructor at the department yet. I was still pretty new. And then, like, probably 3 or 4 days later, I'm coming out of roll call, and there was this officer, Johnson. Johnson spent 20-something years at Oakland PD. He was a fantastic cop, highly decorated, but then, like, his divorce just killed his retirement, so he ended up going back to work. Mm. So he worked for our agency, and he just let himself go. The man just didn't care anymore.
Just getting that paycheck.
Yeah. And now, keep in mind, he came up and mid-80s and retired in the 90s. So weapon lights were foreign to him. So they give him this weapon light and provide him with no training. Meanwhile, I'm the young guy, recently out of the military, or more recently than him. So I understand the premise. And I come out of roll call in the morning, and the sun is still coming up, but it's still dark because we went on the road. We went 10-8 at 6:30. Roll call was at 6:30 on the road for shift change. And I see him with his gun out, and he's moving around his vehicle. And I'm like, I guess I should probably take my gun out too because something's going on.
Yeah,
he's peeking, and I'm like, is he looking for someone crouching behind the vehicle? Like, I'm like, oh, today's the day. Let's do this.
Burn it down.
So I kind of like start moving tactically or whatever you want to call it. I'm like, Johnson, what do you got? And he's like, I dropped my damn pin. And I'm like, where's your handheld? You still have a handheld flashlight? He's like, and he looked at me like I was stupid. Yeah. He's like, well, they gave us this. And I'm like, my brother in Christ, you have 52 inches of duty belt. You have room for a handheld flashlight on your kit. Like, he just took it off. Like, I don't need this anymore.
I got one flight. I don't need
and, you
the
know,
other
there,
one.
You, there was a video that floated around on Live Leak, and you'd see it on YouTube too. There was a video where a cop was directing traffic with his weapon light. That's completely training related. Mm-hmm. You know, Bill, recently there was that controversy, like Wilson Combat put up that video where they had guys talking about weapon light stuff. And the examples they gave me, or they gave the audience, were both training related. So I'm like, give me an example that is a direct fault of the technology. And the most common example people come up with is like, well, the bad guys shoot at the light. I'm like, yeah, but during the day, they just shoot at you.
Yeah.
So it's not really the disadvantage you think it is. So I think sometimes just a lack of critical thinking, not only in the technology getting involved in the situation, but how you're looking to overcome it. Because, guys, we need lights. Like, you can't go out at night and out of sheer stubbornness see better. You can't just be like,
I'm eating carrots.
And then so you pop a vessel carrots. And you're like, I see colors. So we drive cars. We use radios. We use cell phones. For self-defense, we have flashlights. We have literally guns exist because it makes more sense. It's a technological solution to a human shortcoming. Mm-hmm. And lights are the same way. I don't care about the handheld versus the weapon mounted or whatever. But like, if you're going to – you got to be proficient with whatever your technology is. And sometimes we use technology to overcome a human deficiency. Mm-hmm. Light. Sometimes we change guns to overcome a failure to train. You can hide some bad behaviors on a single action trigger that you can't hide on a striker fire gun. And I think that might be some reason why people are like, oh, the gun just shoots better. I'm like, no, it's just you have less time to screw it up.
Yeah, there's less time for you to move it before.
Yeah. And it's a heavier gun, so it's going to handle recoil energy better, so on and so forth. So I understand it, but I don't.
But you still suck.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting whenever somebody with a red dot sight can actually pass the federal air marshal.
Pool. Yeah, yeah.
The air marshals that already did?
Besides everybody in the world that uses red dots, probably?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It's all right.
Well, and that's not even the Well, I'm not getting into that. That's not even the right fam call, but whatever. Because the fam call that everybody knows about, the one that's on the internet, that's
the,
not.
The current one.
No. Because I think what happened is an air marshal came to the office one day and he's like, did you guys know that there are planes longer than 7 yards? So it's not official yet, but for the past couple of years, they have been playing with a replacement. So we'll see.
They just shoot at the door and the door falls off.
No, it's a much harder course of fire. I've shot it. And I shot it with a red dot. So, yeah, I've shot the 7-yard one, and I've shot the one that's going to become the – may become the official replacement because I had a fam send me, like, hey, here it is, and he just texted it to me. But I'm not going to out him for obvious reasons. But that's, like, a complete tangent anyway. But it's just interesting to see, like, okay, guys, hold on. Why are we using a qual to measure skill?
Yeah, performance.
Because a qual is just for court defensibility. That's like saying, hey, I passed the FBI qual, and I'm like, were you awake? Well, yeah. I'm like, that's the bare minimum.
Good
That's
job.
All you need. The FBI, the new FBI call is not even a sobriety test. I'm convinced that you could just go out there just completely fucking zooted and pass that shit with your support hand only because it's not a difficult call. No quals are fucking difficult.
Yeah.
And if they are difficult, ding, 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 your skill sucks and you need to work on it. Quals are literally compromises between a measure of potential technique that could be used and court defensibility. And usually in court systems, they ask, is the officer qualified? Yes. Okay. And then that never comes up. I can't believe some of these quals don't get drug into court. Because a lot of these quals that you see are laughable.
Yeah. All they're wanting is that box checked. Like, is it qualified? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and the courts – and everybody just kind of agrees. Like, the defense attorneys agree and the prosecutors agree. Like, oh, yeah, the box is checked. Let's move on.
Yeah.
Unless the officer did something weird.
But even then, like if it was like a – in-service training record that showed longevity of shooting and performance over time or whatever, like even something like that would never get brought up because it's not the same situation they were actually in.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like they're on a range. It's a controlled environment. Like you got to think like a qual is you're doing it in the safest possible space you can actually shoot. Right, which is on the range.
It's literally the only time where you know all three metrics ahead of time.
Yeah. Exactly. And like you're not gonna get the same situation, metrics, level of enthusiasm, all the other thingies that are happening when some dude is stabbing some lady and now you have to apply your qual skills. You know what I mean? Like that's why it's retarded. Right? And then
they're not designed to be failed. No. I don't think a lot of people realize that. Quals are literally designed to be passed.
Yeah, so they could literally check those boxes.
So even a qual like the air marshal, it is technically harder, but it's not hard shooting for people who practice.
For people who practice, yeah. Which could be you.
But you're not supposed to talk like that, right?
No,
you're not
right?
supposed to be confident in your skill set because then people just think, oh, he's being arrogant or he gets to shoot all the time or people make up excuses. I'm like, yeah, I shoot all the time because I do it for a living. But I shot all the time when I didn't do it for a living.
Yeah.
Because it was something that I was interested in, something that I was passionate about, something that I enjoyed. Mm-hmm. I still find shooting very therapeutic. Generally, these days, if I wanted to shoot just for funsies, I just shoot intermediate cartridge long range. I'll take I got an FN DMR3, and I'll just lay out with some good 77 grain or some shitty 77 grain, and I'll just make things go dang for about an hour. And try loophole shooting, awkward position shooting, but mostly I'm just doing it because it's consistently repeatable and it's relaxing. If I want to make myself feel bad, I just shoot one-handed from 25 with a handgun because no matter how good I get at that, I still feel bad about how well I did. And some people, they go to the range and I think this is where you see this in classes a lot. Guys get down on themselves about how well they perform in a class. Mm-hmm. And my question always is to them, what's your baseline? And they're like, what do you mean? I was like, when you go to the range, what are you working on? And they're like, well, you know, I was like, be honest, where do you start? And they're like, well, you know, closer distances, 3 yards, 5 yards. I'm like, okay, cool. And I'm giving you an opportunity to be confident in your skill set. Do you feel like you're good at those distances? And sometimes they'll say no, but usually they'll be like, yeah, I feel pretty good. I'm like, then why are you shooting from them?
Stop staying
move back
there.
To 7. Move back to 10. Your baseline should be where your skill – the first distance of where your skill starts to become questionable. Mm-hmm. So when I go to the range to do my personal practice, I'm starting at 7 yards because under certain conditions, 7 yards, my skill can be a little bit less than what I want. So I go to the range. I don't need to shoot at 3. I'm good there. Every now and then I'll go up there and do some maintenance. but it's going to be one mag, maybe one string. Mm-hmm. And then I'm moving back to 7, and then I'm going back from there. And often these days I go to the range, I start at 10 or 15 and work back from there. And it's like the further back I go, the least likely I am to shoot someone from that distance, but the more critical the skill set is. And one thing that's always bugged me is people don't think about what it means to engage from these distances. Like, you'll see guys at 25, and you're like, all right, 25 yards, give me whatever the round count is. And they'll be like, and I'm like, what are you doing? They're like, well, we have more time from 25. And I'm like, who told you that? I was like, okay, so let's think about this. Let's if I'm about to legally shoot someone from 25 yards, everybody, mm-hmm. how am I justifying that? What's happening that gives me the ability to shoot someone from 25 yards? What are they probably doing? They're probably shooting at me
or somebody else.
Or they're stabbing or shooting at someone else. So that whole time that you feel like you have, that just shit just went right out the window.
You ain't got it.
I like to run a 2-second baseline.
Yeah.
Like, your first round needs to be cooking down range in 2 seconds, and it's completely achievable.
And that's slow.
Yeah. It is slow, mm-hmm. but it's intimidating for people who've never had to do it before. Mm-hmm. So sometimes guys have to come to a class to realize that they're not as good as they thought they were because they were only working on what they were already good at.
Like out here, we've got the one of the drills that they're doing is the B8s at 25.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. B8s are intimidating too.
It's 10 seconds, 10 rounds in 10 seconds, and
is that from the holster?
Yeah, from
that's
the holster.
Smoking fast. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But it's throwing a lot of people off because they're like, oh, sweet, 10 minutes for the 10 rounds. You know, they're thinking like the regular B8. No, dog.
Because it's
10 seconds.
Usually 20 seconds.
Yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We did that one time at we were hosting a shoot off or a shooting competition. It was a big event, and they ended up having like 3 people tied. And they're like, hey, Chris, come up with something really quick that we can do to get these guys off the range. I'm like, all right, sure. 25 yards headshots, 2 seconds. And they're like, what? I was like, whoever gets it's going to win. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, 2 seconds is too long. I was like, yeah, that's before you try it.
Yeah.
Let's go.
2 seconds for a headshot. That's
smoking.
Steep.
Yeah.
That's steep.
And they had one guy. I was like, you get one shot. One guy did it.
That's how three-way I do my tie, tiebreakers in class. If I have 2 students tie for top shooter. All like, all right, tightest group wins. And every now and then I'm like, these groups are the exact same size. So, and I've had a 3-way tie before. So I'll take them back to 25. And like, all right, guys, on the tone, give me 1-round headshot. Closest to center cranial vault wins. Because they're all going to make time. Shooters at that level, they're all going to make time. So beep. And then we go down range, and the bullet's the closest to the center, that guy won.
It's a good tiebreaker.
Yeah, it is.
It's easy.
And I think a lot of people feel like distance and speed is mutually exclusive, and that's why I hate the word fast. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to remove fast from my vocabulary as a teacher. I hate saying it. Sometimes it fits. But I like just saying you need to be efficient. You need to be efficient at all distances. And guys are like, well, what does that mean? I was like, if you have a 1-second exposure on your threat before he moves, goes to mm-hmm. color, or fucking turns to vapor, how many rounds do you want to fire? The answer should be as many as I can knowledgeably shoot because mm-hmm. I don't know how many rounds it's going to take to stop him. So you get guys back to 15 and they'll come out of the holster, pop, pop. So we just had about a second go by between those 2 shots. What were they doing in that second? If they needed to re-aim the gun, then they were working. Mm-hmm. But if they were just waiting for a better sight picture but not doing anything to create it, mm-hmm. then they're wasting time.
Makes sense.
So what do y'all got coming up this year, new offerings, or do you have any new offerings?
It's pretty much the same offerings, but I've tweaked I always tweak classes. Yeah. Like the class that you guys have been to, like, it's no longer the same. It's constantly evolving. I got away from the whole, like, write your curriculum out and make it, like, really pretty and easy to read and stuff. And then go by schedule what I want to do. I got away from that, I want to say a few years ago. And now I kind of live curriculum as a living document mm-hmm. and it branches, right? So like, man, I've got a lot of like I got some guys that need more work, some guys that need to be pushed more. I need some guys that like, they're kind of in the middle, right? Well, the curriculum works for all 3 sets of people because they get to push themselves at different rates for the same exercise at most. So it offers a different look at it versus the other way where it was like, hey, this is the standard I want you to meet right now and do it kind of thing. So the my curriculum, at least it's constantly evolving, constantly changing. And like what I found is, it works for a wider variety of people now versus what it used to work for. So where I used to get like, the intermediate to more skillful level guy can come to class and get a lot out of class, but the newer dude's going to struggle a lot. Instead of it, now all of them can get a lot out of class and go home with the ability to like diagnose their stuff so they can get better at understanding what they're doing wrong, know how to fix those things, and then also like how to practice. Because I think that's one of the things I was doing it last year a lot, where I told people, hey, you need to try practice more. You kind of suck at this. You need to practice more, whatever it is. And then at the end of class, one of the feedback things was, you talked about it a lot, but you never showed us how. And I was like, you're right, dude. Like, you're right. So I was like, whoever wants to stay another hour, let's talk about how to practice. And so now I've included that into class and teach people how to dry practice properly and also practice. Like, so when they realize, I suck at doing this one thing or this specific skill, now I can isolate that skill in my own practice because now I know how after this class. So it makes it a lot easier for dudes to take away those kind of things versus before. I know back when I was a brand new student at this kind of thing, I had no idea how to dry practice. And I learned as I went. And I realized that based off of just sucking at certain things, I just work on those specific things and then got better. And then and I just created my own way of dry practicing. Well, there are right and wrong ways to do it. So it's kind of cool to add that into classes. At least that's what I've seen. And I'll get a lot of good feedback from that. So little things like that I've tweaked in classes. So that's what I would call not new offerings, but adjusted classes that have changed and evolved. So it's cool.
Very good. Very good. That's an interesting point that like nobody ever taught me how to dry fire. Mm-hmm. Like we would do it. Like sometimes we'd have like a point of instruction where we had to dry fire, mm-hmm. but no one was ever teaching me like, hey, this is something you should do on your home. I didn't even, getting into handguns, like the military, you did like the dime drill and stuff like that. Yeah. And that's dry fire. Yes, but no.
But it's bullshit.
It is. but it's interesting. We were talking last night about selection, how the military mm-hmm. doesn't teach you, how the Army doesn't teach you how to swim. Mm-hmm. They expect you to know how.
Yeah.
At certain levels, you're like, yeah, you need to be able to swim. Are you going to do it? When's the class?
When do we try?
No class. You got to know how to do it right now, or you got to leave. And I'm like, what the? Like, that doesn't make, like, this mm-hmm. is an essential function of the job, but you won't show me how to do it your way. Like, then, like, everything else in the Army is like, there's a block of instruction on how to clean a toilet. I'm sure there's an FM somewhere. mm-hmm. But swimming, oh, you got to come with that, bro.
Yeah.
So, like, for me, I like staying inside my fog lanes, man. Like, there's things that I know how to teach that I don't teach. Like, I'm a certified 3 different certifications on precision rifle. I don't teach precision rifle because it doesn't. I'm not passionate about it because I spent some time as a police sniper and I fucking hated it. And I'm like, this is so boring. It's so hot. Can I open the no? If I do, he'll know I'm here. That kind of stuff. So, and that's a complete facetious exaggeration, but it's pretty much the truth. Like I just didn't enjoy it. So with me, I'm teaching obviously what's in demand, right? So for me, for the past almost 10 years now, red dot instructor, low light instructor. And low light instructor is actually seeing it's a resurgence now. I'm teaching it way more often than I used to before. And then a branch of that is defensive red dot handgun and low light handgun. And I have low light employment, which is kind of like three different techniques in the same class. And I am playing with the idea of breaking that down because the last class I taught at BTO was just low light handgun. And I think a lot of guys walked away from that with a sobering experience of what it's like to have to start a fight with a handheld light. Like, oh, this sucks.
Yeah.
which is how it might start anyway, even if you do have a weapon light. But I'm the same way as John. Like, I'm constantly adjusting my curriculum. And like, the greatest advice I ever had, and it goes back to something we said earlier, like, you're never going to be everyone's most effective instructor. You're just not. You can't take a class and 100% get everybody. But that shouldn't stop you from trying. So I'm constantly trying to make adjustments to my curriculum to sometimes based on feedback and sometimes just based on new information or new way to do something, or I learned a better way to approach something.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to update my curriculum to be as effective as possible. And I keep it as modular as I can, but you've got bases at the instructor level. You've got these bases that need to be covered because I'm like, this is what you should be teaching your people. If you have more time, great, but this is the bare minimum and this is what we're going to cover. at the instructor level. Low light, same thing, because a lot of people are very deficient in their low light techniques, and I can tell by the way that they talk about it. And I'm not saying like I'm the guru on the hill about low light techniques, but it only takes some common sense to figure out how to not to blind yourself with a flashlight in your own house. And if you have, if you're talking to me as if you're saying that you haven't figured that out, then I know that you're here and I'm up here. And that's not arrogance. That's just fact.
Those are ooze levels.
Those are ooze levels. They are ooze levels. So if someone hasn't even applied critical thinking to a task, then I already know, well, I've already beat you just by the fact that I considered what you're saying. And I said to myself, well, I put that mirror up on that wall, so I'm not going to blind myself on it because I know it's there.
I know where it is. Yeah.
I put it there. Also, my walls are white. Why? What are you doing?
Technique.
Just don't do that. Don't do that. It's pretty simple. But that person hasn't taken formal instruction, so they don't know, and they haven't thought about it, so they don't know. So I'm trying to find ways outside of like the instructor level classes to encourage people to take a little bit more critical approach to some of the things that they're doing, and also get a lot of reps and be held accountable for what they're doing. Because usually when you take some of these technique-based classes like low light, accuracy is like third on priority. Like you got safety, concepts, principles, accuracy. And I'm like, we need to fix that. So no new classes in the works. I'm not really designing anything right now. I'm pretty happy with low light, teaching red dot, instructor level or not, handgun stuff. Obviously, rifle, I still enjoy teaching rifle, but there's not a high demand for it right now. Like, mm-hmm. I don't see nearly as much demand as I used to for defensive rifle. I think a lot of people are more and more people are trying to up their handgun game, and I appreciate that. So, like, I would like to be teaching more active shooter response classes, but the ATF has ruined that for us by making it impossible for us to get ammunition. So that's what I got going on.
Oh, sweet.
So where can people find out more information about you?
I'm on Instagram, Sage Dynamics. I have a Patreon, Sage Dynamics. I do informational videos there. I do reviews there. I also have a YouTube channel, which I'll put like a video a month. But all my content, I'm doing at least two videos a week on Patreon.
Oh, wow.
So more content, sometimes three. And there's three different levels, really there's only two. If you're a learning level supporter, you also get like actual instructional practice supplements. I don't believe that you can actually receive instruction from a video. So I don't like to say instructional videos, but they're learning videos. You can learn some stuff. You can pick up some stuff. And it's a much quieter environment.
Yeah, you don't get all the
no trolls. God. And I'm like, hey, if you want to pay me to troll me, I'm cool with that.
Yeah.
The riffraff.
Yeah. If the riffraff wants to pay to come in, I'm good with that. It, you know? But it's just the Patreon has been a great move because it's a smaller community, obviously, than YouTube. But YouTube, anybody can drive by and be like, asshole. Like, that's like, who are you? Like, on Patreon, like, you gotta have a key to come in and start running your mouth. And I'm cool with that, but I don't really get any of that. I think, and I'm not interested like building an occult, you know, cause sometimes somebody will pop on, they'll be a supporter for a month and then they disappear. And I'm cool with that too. But you know, if people want to see video content, you know, I figure I did YouTube free for almost 9 years.
Yeah.
And that was a video a week for 9 years. I spent a lot of money. Videos. Mm-hmm. And now I think people realize like I never made any money off of YouTube. And there's this weird thing in this gun community where the second a guy has to pay for a video, he puts away the American flag and pulls out the communist flag.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
What do you mean our videos? Like, we're supposed to get this for free. You're supposed to just provide this service. I don't know how much this costs. But there's a lot that goes into it, as you guys know. There's a lot that just goes into production, right? Mm-hmm. So you think about your time, your equipment. But on gun stuff, you're thinking about your ammunition, wear and tear, optics. If I'm doing a review, I got to buy the thing to review. Even if I get it for free, I still have to feed it ammunition.
Yeah.
So it gets and you can write some of that off, but it gets to the point where I'm like, I'm still working for free. And if you guys want better content, then you can support me. And if you don't want to support me, you don't have to. It's not a big deal. But everybody wants to – not everybody. Some people want to run their mouths about it. So, you know, it's been good though. And then there's I'm on Twitter, X, at Sage Dynamics. That's another place you can find me. That's where I give my hot takes. And
one-liners
and my one-liners. I got a lot of one-liners on there, but you know, mostly it's Patreon, Instagram.
Any new books in the works?
Yeah, I'm always writing, man. I'm writing right now. The whole Rushing Winter series, I thought I still have two more books in that series and I'm done with it. It was always planned to be 9 books. But I got sidetracked by sci-fi, so I started writing Carson Gray. And I've been so, like, I've got so many ideas in my head there that I haven't gone back and finished the Rushing books. Because I was dropping a Rushing book every January, February, and I didn't release one this year. Because I'm 20 chapters into it, but then I got, oh, squirrel. And I wrote 2.5 books.
That's a big fucking squirrel.
So I've got the next Carson Gray book for June is done. I'm in editing right now, and then I've already started on the one after that.
It's fantastic. So, congratulations!
I'll get back to Rushing Winter eventually. I know some people are waiting on it. I'm trying to have it done this year, so we'll see.
What about you, Duffy?
So I'm on all the same stuff that Aaron's on, just under Kinetic Consulting. And then my website's probably the best way to go because you can go in there.
Shit, I got one of those too.
Yeah, and you can kind of like, it's like a hub for all of it. I also have like a blog on my website that'll also like leads to informational and educational stuff. So like every podcast that I do goes on there, it goes on the newsletter and stuff. But yeah, I would encourage people to go to kinetic-consulting.net, and that's where you can kind of link to everything. But I started using a Patreon also. I think it's well worth it in the grand scheme of things versus giving it to YouTube kind of thing.
Yeah.
And kind of getting nothing for it.
Or more signal, less noise too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Better community.
Yeah. It's honestly a great way of like, cause now I can communicate with people easier and I don't have to sift through the riffraff. And cause you get them and the videos are still going up on YouTube every once in a while, but mostly it goes on Patreon and I need to catch back up with it because I've been moving and kind of stopped doing it for the couple months that I was in the process of packing and unpacking and stuff. So it's going to kick back up again, but that's pretty much where I am. But constantly traveling, constantly doing the things.
You've got some products too.
Yes. So on my website, I still have all my products when it comes to the dumb pouches, the nerd for retaining your night vision, the med pouch that came out last year. So that's been all really good. Discontinued the Lola, right? Because Theorem came out with their version of it, which was cool. But yeah, I've got a couple other things in the works that I'm kind of playing around with. I need to find somebody that wants to or can make more rubberized style products. So I'm looking for somebody to do that kind of thing.
Hey, me too.
Yeah.
I need to find a good rubbery thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've got idea that I really want to do, but I just need something in that kind of rubberized material. So we'll see. So, but yeah, I've got a few different ideas for different thingamabobs that I want to do that aren't super niche. Because the Mallmate was really niche and that those things don't sell very well. Yeah, not something that specific. It's
your target market is people who bought malls.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's really small.
Of a subset of a very, very small.
The multiple inceptions of subsets. Yeah.
There's dozens of people.
Yeah.
Rifle, mall, want this.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so I am trying to go for things that I want. Like all my products are things that I want, but things that I want that aren't so niche. So we'll see. We'll see. It should be kind of cool. I have a couple prototypes I'm messing with right now.
Oh, nice.
And we'll play around with them. But I'm still working with a lot of different companies, prototyping different things. As usual, like always trying to like fix, adjust, or like give them a better way of doing something based off of like use from an actual user versus just an engineer that's just like, this is in the lab, perfect, and you don't get that.
That's a good radio voice.
It was it nice. So Skookum. but yeah, so it should be awesome. And Skookum means brave.
There you go.
But yeah, so yeah, we'll see. We'll see how it comes out. I'm pretty stoked about it, though. It's always cool things and. I like selling thingies that I wanted because other people may want them to. Mm-hmm. Like the dump pouch was one of the biggest ones. I used to cut those things up and glue them and sew myself out of somebody else's 18 different dump pouches. And
it's a cool dump pouch.
It works out really good. So I dig it.
If we sold night vision, mm-hmm. we would definitely have nerds to go with them.
There's a lot of companies that use the nerd as an addition to the night vision. So when you buy night vision from certain companies, they buy them from me. to just add in.
Yeah.
Because they're not expensive compared to night vision, and it's a really
save you a lot of money.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Like the amount of night vision I've dropped alone. You know? I still have a PBS 14 with a cracked lens because of it. So, but it still works. So it's cool. But yeah, little things like that. Still going along with more stuff. So
cool. Well, dudes, once again, thank you for your time today. Are you jumping in one of their classes this weekend?
I don't know yet. I haven't figured out my schedule. I haven't picked yet. I'm waiting to see who's low.
I will bless three people with my presence.
He wants to pretty much come to our class tomorrow night and shoot one handed a lot.
There you go. Awesome. Well, we appreciate your time, and we appreciate your time. If you've stuck around this long and listened to us talk, thank you very much. If you've got questions, please drop them in the comments. They won't respond because they're only on Patreon, but we will probably not respond either.
Hey, on my Patreon, if you shoot well enough, you can get a gun.
If you
I do a monthly challenge, so you can literally, if I do a drill every month, and if you're best on the drill, you get something. And this year, I'm doing 12 months of my favorite guns.
Oh,
oh wow,
oh yeah,
so giving away some bullshit. Well, not no, they earned it.
Wow,
giving away some earned shit.
That's probably a pretty stiff competition on that channel.
There's like three people to keep winning.
You got to rewrite your
rules.
At least
you only have three FFLs you got to send it to.
They have a safe that's
like
just all my Cowan guns.
If John was on there, he would have won everything, but the month I did a shotgun drill.
I'm not allowed. Not allowed.
He's banned from several competitions.
Yeah.
He keeps winning.
Like, well, I got James Barron. James Barron, whenever he wants to win, he'll pop in. And
he's a good shooter, man.
Yeah,
he's got to make sure the prize is worth it.
Yeah.
No, I mean, you heard Shockey at the safety brief. He's like, I had to make Duffy a freaking instructor.
Yeah, because he kept winning year after year after year.
Yeah, they don't even do the prize table the same way as they did, where it was like, you won 7 prizes. Pick what you want. And you're like, yeah. Got me like, I don't know, like 10 grand the first year or something.
And that's why
you
they don't let
all
him
the
play
good stuff, and you're like, wait a second.
Any longer. Anyway, thanks for listening. Appreciate it.